Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to another edition of Mateo's Hoop Diary. We're checking in with more Denver Nuggets again. This time it's a special episode because the Five Reasons Sports Chief Ethan Skolnick is here to give us his expert testimony on the LeBron James years. This is very important because what we're seeing in Denver is some likely all-time stuff from Nikola Jokic, and I couldn't think of anybody better to help, you know, give perspective to the audience. Ethan, how are you? And thank you for being here.
Good to be with you, Mateo. And again, we appreciate everybody subbing to the YouTube channel and also to the new Five Reasons NBA feed, of which you're a big part of it. So we appreciate that.
You know, a lot of people think that Jokic is some boring square because he doesn't dominate the headlines with some hilarious or bombastic quote like Shaquille O'Neal in the past, or says something philosophical like the great Bill Walton, may he rest in peace. But he's really someone that keeps the main thing, and is kind of like the Michael Corleone of the NBA. He's quiet to the outsiders, but a killer to those that know him. So taking that into consideration, how would you describe LeBron James's personality when you met him in 2000, or when you started hanging around him in 2010, covering him?
Well, I mean, again, he had been in the NBA for 7 years at that point, and you know, he'd been in the spotlight longer. So, you know, you couldn't have two more different paths than what you had with Jokic and LeBron. I mean, you're talking about one guy who was the chosen one and had that on the cover of Sports Illustrated and tattooed to him, you know, when he was a teenager, and another one who was a second round pick. And so I think so much of this goes back to that. You know, by the time that LeBron came to Miami, he was already the biggest, you know, arguably the most scrutinized athlete in the world, even though he hadn't won a championship to that point, and played 7 years, and obviously they hadn't gotten past Boston and other teams, and they really hadn't put enough around him. They were trying in Cleveland to get, you know, Amari Stoudemire, Chris Bosh at one point, but it hadn't worked out, and so he ends up in Miami. Most people didn't want him in Miami, especially the New York based media didn't want him in Miami, since New York was an option for him. And so by the time that he got there, I mean, he was already like, I mean, this was, we covered Dwayne, you know, but Dwayne, we saw grow. I mean, Dwayne came when he was, you know, 20 years old. And, you know, again, he was the fifth pick of the draft, but he didn't come with this kind of hoopla. By the time LeBron got there, this was a totally different deal. So it was just about sort of getting to know what he was behind the scenes. And my, you know, interactions with him, you know, I started to connect with him a little bit when I got a chance to do one-on-one with him that December. And I think he appreciated that I researched certain things that some had not, particularly like a book that he had written that I could apply to what was going on currently. And he was like, you read that book? Nobody read that book. And so we kind of developed a little bit of connection off of that. But I don't, you know, it's impossible to compare the two of them from a personality standpoint. It's just that, you know, LeBron has been under the spotlight like no other athlete, and he's handled it largely well. I mean, the things that LeBron's made fun of about, you know, like making up stories or sometimes this, like, these are small things compared to what other athletes have, you know, particularly those who've been in the spotlight, even not even anything close to him, you know, have gone through, or the behavior that they've exhibited. I mean, LeBron has essentially not been allowed to make a single mistake his entire adult life, and he hasn't made a lot of big ones. So, you know, you have that. And on the other hand, you have a player from overseas, second round pick, not especially athletic on the face of it, doesn't do the kinds of things on the court that get the headlines necessarily, even if he is a unicorn in his own way. And he's also, you know, he's in Denver. You know, you had LeBron in Miami, you know, for a period of time. Now he's in Los Angeles, so two flashier markets than that. So it's really hard to compare them from a personality standpoint. I my overall thought is that the NBA as a whole has taken too long to embrace Jokic and other players like that because they've sort of been fixated on LeBron, Curry, and Durant. Not that the three of them didn't deserve it, but now we're seeing the results of that because I think there are a lot of interesting players, teams around the league, but the casual fan doesn't really follow them because they've just been fed the same, three or four players here over the past decade.
Fair enough. And to follow up on some of the points you made, because the all of the hoopla and all the scrutiny, how much did it weigh on LeBron, specifically the inaugural season with the Heat, when fresh off the letter from Dan Gilbert calling him a quitter, and all of the unfair expectations put on the media, well, set by the media and fans. How much did that weigh on him?
Oh, I think it weighed on him a lot. I mean, I don't. I mean, I think you saw it in the finals. I
Okay.
still believe that the 2011 finals was basically meltdown, which was caused by everything that happened that year to that point. And you look at December 2nd, 2010. I was in Cleveland that night when the batteries were being thrown.
Wow.
I mean, I was in that town for 2 days beforehand, and there were in the urinals, the urinal cakes were basically LeBron's face. That's how he was being treated in the place that he'd left and would ultimately 4 years later go back to. And you look at the scrutiny he dealt with. I mean, we were in places. I traveled with that team that year, and we would be in like Portland, Memphis, like places that never had a chance to get LeBron. So they shouldn't have been so personally offended by his choice to go to Miami. It wasn't like it was New York. It wasn't, or even of course, Cleveland, Chicago, which he considered. But these other markets that were not considered, and I've never seen anything like it. I mean, he was, public enemy number one. It's hard to live like that. And it's also hard to be in the spotlight, like I said, every minute where every single show on the worldwide leader is about you. And also that, they seem to at the time have a bias against him being where he was and the decision that he made. And there was a perception that was made of him that I don't think is fair. I don't think LeBron is a selfish person. I don't. That's not my interactions with him. I mean, I just encountered him again. I haven't seen him in a couple of years. And first thing he does, tap me on the shoulder and ask me about my family. So this is, that's not the person that I've dealt with. I think that he has certain passive aggressive habits. We saw that with the fit in, fit out stuff with K Love in Minnesota and other things along those lines. And he does tend to want everything to be about him. He can't keep himself out of the spotlight, even when he says he's going to. Even the Zero Dark 30 thing about staying off social media during the playoffs. I mean, that in itself is you're drawing attention to the fact that you're not going to be drawing attention to yourself. So I get it, but that some people are just sort of LeBron weary at this point. But I also think that nobody really could have handled himself much better than he did under these circumstances and continue to perform at a high level, as he has even to this point. I know the season has not been as good, and you can see signs of breaking down here in terms of his on-off numbers and some other metrics. But again, he's nearing 40 years old, and I interviewed him a week before his 30th birthday. I sat down with him for 20 minutes in Independence, Ohio, at the practice facility, and asked him what he thought he would be doing at 40. I wrote that piece for Bleacher Report. He says, "Hopefully, I'll be around the team." Well, he's more than around the team. He's the head of the Lakers. So, I think we have to put into perspective kind of where he is and what he's done, and that may not mean for some of he's the greatest player of all time because I still think it's Jordan from what I saw growing up, but. That he's certainly in the conversation, and I think sometimes we don't realize how significant that is.
Absolutely, all of that, scrutiny and all the stuff you mentioned. Jokic never had to deal with all of that. The Denver Nuggets were the surprise Western Conference team in the bubble. And, after that, it seemed like too many people didn't, really care about them. Of course, there were injuries to Porter and Murray, which were a factor, but it just seemed like people forgot about them until they were like in the Western Conference Finals in 2023. But transitioning to the court, in 2023, Jokic, when we were at the finals there, he led the team to the championship, the first in NBA history for the Denver Nuggets. And he that season in the regular season, he averaged 70.3 true shooting, which is pretty remarkable, which that counts your field goal percentage and your production at the line. And it makes me think this guy is the greatest offensive player of his generation, and he's approaching guys like LeBron, Shaquille O'Neal, who was the hub of the triangle offense, and in terms of devastation, also maybe like someone like Kareem, who had the cruise missile, the most unstoppable weapon in history. So when you take into account what this guy is doing now and what you saw LeBron do for those 4 years, how would you describe the potency of top shelf LeBron?
Well, I think that, and I'm biased, I think 12, 13 LeBron is the highest level that he's reached. I know people can argue 2016, and I certainly get it. I mean, in terms of the way he carried some of those Cleveland teams before he got to Miami, but especially after, because again, they had issues with injuries. I mean, I covered the 2015 finals, and he didn't have Kyrie, and he didn't have Kevin. I mean, his best players around him were J.R. Smith and James Jones and Matthew Dellavedova. So, I am not going to say that he wasn't great in Cleveland. I covered that 12-13 team that won 27 straight games, and he pretty much could do anything he wanted. If you look at his metrics during that period of time, just I think he ended up shooting 56.6%. The Heat basically unlocked his efficiency. That's what they did for him. And Spoelstra in particular, and I think it's something that LeBron has come to appreciate later on. But that was the key thing with him. And that 27 game winning streak, Dwayne was really good during it. People forget that was probably sort of the last vestige of really elite Dwayne that we saw was during that streak. He played 25 out of the 27 games. The two he missed, Mike Miller started in his place. They kept the same rotation at the same time, but LeBron was just pretty much unstoppable during that period of time. Now, is this Jokic better? It's a tough question. I think that we're starting to see now as his team hemorrhages a little bit around him, where he doesn't, you haven't had Gordon. Murray does not look the same. And, they've lost some key, rotation and starting pieces, whether it was KCP or and some of the others. I don't know that they've completely adequately replaced them. You've talked about that some. We're starting to see it go the other way right now. He has to kind of do what LeBron did in the pre-Heat days. So this has happened at different stages for them, and the question is to me, and Jokic's numbers are ridiculous. I mean, he's averaging the most feet in their per 3-point shot this year, which is just crazy. But can he drag this team to the finals? Because if he does that, then that's LeBron kind of did that in 07. So I think that we have to start to look at it now. Like, I don't know that Jokic is going to get on another team of the caliber that he had 2 years ago. I don't really think anybody was beating that Denver team. Like, the Heat knew in the finals they couldn't beat that team. So, but he doesn't have that team now. And so I'll be curious to see. I also don't think that Jokic and I'm, it's, again, this is a supposition on my part, but I don't think Jokic is as driven to play as long as LeBron has. And so I don't think that he's going to accumulate some of the numbers that LeBron has simply again because of duration of his career. I mean, he's not going to play till 40. So I think that's part of it. So you do get into peaks, and LeBron's peak has just been so long, where I could talk about it being so many different years that I can't really put Jokic there with him, but I can say that we're starting to, it's hard to exclude Jokic from the top five centers of all time at this stage. I think people who are not at least considering it are short-sighted in that.
Transitioning, because you said that the top five centers, the moments that got me thinking that Nikola Jokic is some great player going into, very special territory. In 2018, he had the fastest triple-double in NBA history in Milwaukee before the first half was over. And, he's av almost averaging a triple-double right now. But on top of that, there was a I want to mention how in 2020, when he showed up at the bubble, many people might think this is insignificant, but the man showed up in Miami Heat shape. And this said a lot to me about his basketball character and what he's about. He's obviously put on some more size because he doesn't want to get abused in the post, some healthy size, but he's someone who is also committed to fitness. But the big thing that was impressive to me about his postseason resume is in 2021, a few months after Jamal Murray tears his ACL, they get in a series with the Portland Trailblazers. Prime Dame is in this series, and the Denver Nuggets win in six games. And this is significant because when a player like Jokic is missing the top weapon out of their holster, in this case, Jamal Murray, it's very easy for opposing defenses to load up on them. And they got it done. Eventually, they got swept in the second round by the Suns. But, watching all of those things got me thinking, man, if this guy gets all of his horses ready like he did in 2023, he will do some outrageous stuff. So looking at LeBron, what were the moments that you saw, or maybe some Miami Heat people saw behind the scenes that were like, Man, LeBron James ain't just great. He's headed for Mount Rushmore territory.
Well, I mean, there's so many of them. I go to his ability to respond to those situations for the most part. I mentioned the 2011 finals, obviously, was an anomaly in terms of what he did over the course of his career in Miami. I don't think he gets enough credit for some of the big shots that he made over the course of time. He'd be criticized for passing up a shot. I remember in Utah where he passed to Haslam, and then there was a whole debate about, it was like went on for days about whether LeBron was afraid to take the last shot, which if you looked at the actual metrics, LeBron was more efficient in those situations than Kobe was over the course of his career. But it's just, people remember kind of what they want to remember.
Right.
I go to that 27 game.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Playing streak, and when it ended, and it ended in Chicago, and Kirk Heinrich, kind of had like a cheap shot that LeBron wasn't happy about. He complained about it after the game. It came off as a little bit sour grapes. Danny Ainge went on WEEI and kind of stuck his nose in where it didn't belong and started talking, sort of bad mouthing LeBron about it. We were at shoot around in New Orleans, of all places, a little out of it, and LeBron was complaining to us about Danny Ainge's comments. And then, of course, you had Pat coming out and saying, shut the bleep up and manage your own team. And then LeBron comes out, and I think he made like five threes in the first half. And it's just, it was that ability to compartmentalize, I think. I mean, I think now we're talking about longevity, but I think the ability to compartmentalize and not have it affect his play, which again is why the 2011 final sticks out, because he clearly got in his head in that finals. To the point that I think like 2:45 Dallas time, he was tweeting now or never before one of the games, where like he was like telling the world that he was in his own head. So, but I think there were so many moments, that you're just like, this guy's just different. The 61 points against Charlotte. Fortunately, I missed that game because I had another commitment that I think that's probably why he scored 61 points, so I couldn't see it in person. But it was a lot of these kind of sort of outlandish moments where he would top himself, right? And I wrote when he left Miami, he would never win another MVP, and he hasn't. And I think that again, the reason for that is that we've sort of began to take it for granted at a certain point. Voters did; they got a little tired of some of the narratives, some of the dialogue, and now he's not at that level. But there were 3 years in there where you could have made a case, but there was always somebody else who kind of popped during that period of time. So, I don't think there's any question he's top five in history. I think that we start to get into, it's tough with eras to compare certain players and what they did. And we start talking about Kareem, and we start talking about, even Magic and others. Will, I mean, it's tough. I mean, this is not an easy thing to kind of decide. I do think that certainly in the contemporary era, it's Michael and it's LeBron, and then you kind of figure it out, and whether Jokic can get in there. I think Jokic should have to win. I feel this way about Giannis too. I think they have to win at least one more championship as the front man. Durant is complicated because I don't really know if he was the front man or he wasn't the front man, but I think those two in particular, I think, have to win another title to sort of elevate into some of these all-time, top 10 type conversations.
Well said. Real quick on the those epic moments that get you thinking how special LeBron is. I'll never get over when Dwayne tossed him the baseline lob and he went over John Lucas completely and finished it with one hand. That looked like Gulliver abusing the little people. But you mentioned a moment ago how people remember what they want to with in terms of him being a late game option, and he certainly was, and that wasn't a weakness. But when you're playing at this level, people usually nitpick every part of your game. Before, Jokic's weakness was defense, especially in pick and roll. He's now evolved as someone you cannot target efficiently there. But when you were in Miami, Did LeBron have a weakness to his game?
Well, I think he had one,
What is it?
which it was shooting, I think.
Okay, okay.
I think it was consistency of his long range shooting, and that's why, Popovich was such a rival for him, because it was pretty much Pop who decided we're gonna let him shoot. Like that's I well, it was Pop, but it was also Stan. Stan did it in Orlando, and it frustrated LeBron. But it was just okay, we're gonna turn him into a shooter. And I think if you look at some of the struggles he had against San Antonio when he had them, it was related to that. But as we see over the course of his career, he became a plus 3-point shooter, over time. And this year he goes through these streaks, right, where he's really hot for a while and he's really cold for a while. He got off to a really hot start this year and then it tapered off. But I think it has been the perimeter shooting. But again, it's not really an issue anymore. I mean, Michael, it was a different game. He wasn't asked to take as many threes. We remember the one game and the putting up the palms against Portland and all that. But again, Michael, he was a good 3-point shooter. But again, at that time, you weren't expecting guys to shoot from extend the floor to 27, 28 feet. He didn't need to because he was just he got in sort of the mid post and good night. Okay, and that was even after some of the athleticism wasn't where it was. I think that LeBron, there was always an itch to get him to have more of a post game. The Heat, he certainly met with Hakeem. That was a big thing that he did after the first season of Miami. The Heat really wanted that because they saw him as more of a power forward in their system. That's something that LeBron didn't really want to play the quote unquote four when we used to focus. And that's when not Pat, but Spo went to the whole positionless thing. A lot of it, I think, was because LeBron didn't like being categorized as a position. So Spo's just like, we're positionless. But like LeBron didn't like guarding David West. That was a particular thing he kept complaining about. And but the Heat sort of saw that as he aged, that maybe it made sense for the ball not to be in his hands quite as much and playing at the four, playing with shooters. What's crazy is ever since the Heat, like no team has really utilized him to the max in the sense of putting the right players around him. Now, some of that's LeBron's own fault because he's wanted guys like Westbrook that didn't make sense near him and all that. But, the Heat's philosophy, like the best Heat lineups during that period of time were not LeBron and Dwayne. They were LeBron was shooting. Like that LeBron was shooting. Like you, when you put him out there with Ray and Shane, Mike Miller, James Jones, like, and Bosh could stretch, like, there was really no way to defend that. Like, what do you, I mean, you were giving LeBron space where the second, third, fourth defender couldn't get over to him quick enough. Those are the best lineups, and the Heat were going to lean into those more and more. But again, then he left. And then, he's playing with Kevin and Kyrie, and it kind of is sort of a facsimile of what he had with Dwayne and Chris. But they didn't, some of those teams didn't have quite the shooting that the Heat, they had some shooters, but JR was inconsistent. I mean, there was no Ray, there was no, that Mike Miller, that, well, Mike was with him, but Mike didn't really play a lot in Cleveland. But the overall point is, like, I think that LeBron has not always been maximized, but some of that has been his own doing. And some of that has been the types of, he's chosen people and stories and narratives sometimes over the right player fit.
Right. Currently, right now, we're about a quarter mark past the NBA or past the NBA season mark, and if the season were to end today, it's very likely that Jokic were to win the MVP. Nonetheless, three quarters to go, and if he were to do that, that would be his fourth in the last 5 years. He'll be 30 in February, and it gets you thinking. He would be getting it because he's the best player in the game, and LeBron certainly was. A lot of years he didn't get it. So how much was he shafted in 2011 and 2014? Because not to lead you anywhere, but Dwayne wasn't himself when in 14, and Durant, when he won it, Russell wasn't himself for a large part of the year when until he came back.
Well, 2011 is a very specific circumstance because that was Derrick Rose, and they were the number one seed. Now, any of the metrics showed you Derrick not only shouldn't have been first, he probably shouldn't have been second. Dwight Howard probably should have been second to LeBron. But that story caught fire. Derrick was exciting. He was playing above the rim at that time, and he had a very good team around him. He had a compelling team around him. And I think there was a little bit of LeBron fatigue after he went to Miami. And the thing is, the expectation bar had been set so high. They're supposed to win 72 games and all the rest of this, that there was no way to reach it. So when they didn't end up reaching it, and especially because they got off to the 9-8 start, Bumpgate kind of calling out Spoelstra behind the scenes, right? So then they won 21 out of 22 and they righted the season. They ended up finishing with the second seed in the East. So it was a good season by any other metric except the expectation level. And so I think that hurt LeBron. 2014, I believe, did Durant win? I think,
Yes,
looking
Durant,
back.
Durant.
I mean, it was hard to make a case against Kevin at that stage. I do think that people underestimated how much the Heat had cratered in that last year. They were tired of playing together. Dwayne was not regularly available. They had replaced role guys like Mike Miller with guys like Tony Douglas. Like, it was not, Michael Beasley was getting minutes. It was just not a real good supporting cast. Like, the 12-13 season was their peak, 11-12, 12-13, and then it came back, and yet they still ended up getting, now again, the MVP doesn't take the playoffs in consideration. They still ended up getting the finals. I believe they were the 2 seed that year behind Indiana. So, I think that played against him too. But this is kind of what happened to Kobe and Shaq, where they only won one, where you can look at the totality of the career and say they should have 4 or 5. Shaq, certainly. But Shaq should have won the year that Nash won, one of the years that Nash won. For Shaq's first year in Miami in 2005, he should have won. But, but also Dwayne probably should have won in 2008, 9 when LeBron did. So much of this is circumstantial. And, but again, I'm not surprised that he's gone this long without an MVP. It's kind of the conversation we have about Eric Spoelstra all the time. Is he the best coach in the league? I believe so. Most people believe so. He's never won a coach of the year and probably never will, because now the expectation level is he's going to coach well. So it's not a surprise when he does. And these awards tend to lean towards whatever is the milder surprise.
Interesting. If he's gotten, shafted a bit by voter fatigue, at least in the Durant year, maybe not so much in that one. Like you said, in 2011, like with Rose, not even dessert, or sh maybe not a sh maybe shouldn't have been second in the advanced metrics. But recently, Jokic lost the 2023 MVP award to Joel Embiid, and that one looked like just straight up voter fatigue. And a good friend of mine, Andy Roth, formerly Associated Press, has this very great quote that says, "Voter fatigue is just a synonym for stupidity. If he's the top guy, if he's the top guy, you got to vote for him." But in closing, my friend, I leave you with this question: can Jokic catch LeBron?
I don't think so. I don't think so. And he may have greater statistical feats in short sample sizes. But I just don't think the longevity is going to be there. I don't. And I think it's as much personality as anything else. I don't see him playing as long. And it's almost like, again, LeBron could not catch Jordan for just cashing in, right? Michael got to 6 finals. He won all of them. And he beat, he kept Barkley from winning. He kept Malone and Stockton from winning. He kept Payton from winning at the time, all the rest of that. He couldn't catch him there, but he has long passed him in longevity, and that is going to be very difficult for. I mean, it's really Kareem and LeBron, and LeBron is playing at a higher level later in his career than Kareem did. He's more relied upon than Kareem was, so it's tough to make any case against LeBron there. And it's hard for me to see. I think Jokic to catch LeBron, he needs to get close to him in titles at least. And I mean, right now it's one. So, I mean, I think if he got to 3 championships, put up these kind of numbers consistently, played till he was 36 at a high level. Yeah. But I don't think the other thing is that what I talked about earlier on, like the phenomenon of LeBron, like is hard to match, and it's going to elevate him because it's almost a fable. What's happened now, the Jokic story is more unlikely. Again, second round pick who emerges to that degree and becomes, this again unicorn in terms of the way he plays the position, in this era or any other. But Bron was a is a is a sociological force of nature, and I don't think there's any way that Jokic can approach that. I don't think there's anybody in, contemporary or coming up. Now the only one is Steph, in terms of the way he changed the game. I think Steph has put a mark on that. I think that he's going to be even more appreciated after he's done. But I don't see anybody else on the horizon who is, in terms of, pushing LeBron. We had the debates about Andrew Wiggins when he was. I mean, there's not another LeBron that's coming along anytime soon. There may not be another Jokic, but I think, again, in terms of ratings, everything else, being the face of the league, being the fulcrum of everything, it's, being a $1 billion enterprise. I mean, even if he's making bad movies, like it's still LeBron.
I'm at the point where, frankly, I don't know. I've watched Jokic for a while, and he's really changed the way I look at things, because he's like an upgraded version of what they used to call Bill Walton the control tower, and when he was with Boston, when in the later stage of his career. And Nikola Jokic is like that version on steroids. And when you look at rebounding, when you look at the number of assists, it's just, LeBron could do that at a high level as well, but it's just, there's just something so special about seeing someone at 7 feet being able to do that. A lot of people try to compare him to Tim Duncan. He certainly is not that guy on defense, but in terms of leadership and the type of impact he can have on offense, it's very Tim-like. But Ethan, I want to thank you for joining me here, everybody. Our Five Reasons Sports Chief Ethan Skolnick, and so thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mateo. Appreciate it.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.